Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at UH1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is Force Center, a show about Star Wars, pop culture, and the ultimate adventure, eating burritos, or life itself, whatever you want to describe. Anyway, I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok, and I've got a story to tell.
And I'm Jennifer Landa. I want to hear the story of the burrito.
The tale of the large burrito is coming up in just a moment. How's that for a teaser, everyone?
That's a beautiful teaser.
First, we want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial, just a free trial, no burritos, at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. We are continuing to recommend Dark Disciple by Christy Golden, a very important book in the life and times of Asajj Ventress, who we're all excited to see pop up again at some point here in this new season of Bad Batch. To download your free audiobook today, you can go to audibletrial.com/forcecenter. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/forcecenter for your free audiobook. We're excited to do our Q&A episode here today. We'll get to our Qs, but we've still got some A's, including asks. Ken, do you want to dive into asks?
I would like to dive into asks here today. And hey, this recording, not this release, but this recording, we have the second episode of Jedi Beat Out. It just went out into the world, and you can check it out now. We are very excited about Jennifer Landa's NPR Meets Star Wars YouTube series. We're going to have this every Monday for, the next 3 weeks. And yeah, I know, I've heard some of your calls. We're going to try to convince Jen to keep going. You know, we're going to find a way. But to do that, head over to our YouTube channel, check it out, give it a like, subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. Tell your friends about what we've got going on here. Jen, what is the quick summary for this week?
This week, we are going back in time to the groovy 70s and early 80s. Lots of disco dancing, that disco Yoda in my mind. That was really ridiculous. Yeah.
Haunting.
It was haunting, right?
Yes.
I don't know. Anyways, join us on that episode where we look at the weird side of Star Wars.
It's been weird from day one, and I love it. It's a wonderful episode. Check that out on our YouTube channel.
I was just going to say what I really enjoyed about this episode, which I power watched before we recorded, is so many of the images from the weird 70s are these WTF images that have been passed around the internet a lot. But I love that the episode has fun with the WTF, but then also answers the titular question of WTF. We're like, actually, there is an answer to what the blank. And Jennifer Land is here to share the answer to what the bleep was that about.
Yeah. Some things I hadn't seen in full context yet, you know? It was fantastic. Also, one of the things we're asking you to consider is supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/4center. Great way to support the show. And we have a goal in place at 400 paid patrons. We'll do a commentary of a Star Wars film. We'll let you choose. You can vote once we reach that goal. We're very, very close. We've done some commentaries in the past, but we want to kind of make this a thing we put up on the Patreon page for supporters and also maybe make available to the world a la carte, as Joseph says. And that reminds me, if you're a Patreon supporter, you get exclusive access to the 007 Center we've got going, our 2.5-hour deep dive. And I say that with pride. 2.5-hour deep dive into Casino Royale is up. It's also available in our shop section on our Patreon page, again, at patreon.com/4center. And from that Patreon page, you get into our Discord, where a lot of people are celebrating and talking Bad Batch. There's a lot of excitement for that series as it goes on. Our Bad Batch report is back. But in the Discord, you can celebrate it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as they do. And I love the conversations.
Yes, with actual friendly Star Wars chat on the internet. Who knew it was possible? But it is.
Yeah.
In our Discord. And yes, another 007 Center coming to discuss Quantum of Solace. Ken, do you think we can talk about Quantum of Solace longer than the film itself, since it's a shorter runtime?
It's going to be easy to do. Yeah, because it's a shorter film. And I've got a lot of thoughts on that film.
Me too. I love that film. Can't wait. Yeah. Can't wait to dive in.
Yeah.
Well, from there, then, let's dive into our life in Star Wars adventures. We're getting to the teased burrito. Ken, do you want to start with your burrito adventures?
Yes. Yeah, I had my weekend didn't start out well. Started with this incident on Friday. I was blessed to go on a radio station to promote my band, the Moon Angels. It didn't go well. I stumbled headlong into a radio bit. I should have known better. And I proceeded to get roasted for 25 minutes by the listeners of Los Angeles. They took calls as they insulted me and my band. It was not fun. So I've been a little down. But I was like, you know what? I got a beacon of hope on Sunday. Get to go to downtown L.A., hang out with friends, and watch the short film that Joseph wrote and directed and that I was blessed to be in, The Nightmare Adorable, in a film festival. And afterwards, Joseph had mentioned lunch. And we're in downtown LA. We're near El Cholo. And I haven't been to that downtown location, but El Cholo is one of my favorite restaurants. And I had, you know, stars in my eyes. And we got to go eat and got to hang out and just kind of be around friends. And that's a good thing after you experience strangers in the world, not on the internet, strangers in your ears on a phone, on a radio station, insulting you. It just felt good to be around warm, wonderful people. And then, yes, I ordered the 1977. El Cholo has all their menu items by year, the year they added them to the menu, the Burrito Dorado, 1 year off of my birthday. And as we were walking back to our car, I rode with Hal Lublin. Hal says, "You finished that?" And I said, I have a long track record of waiters looking at me and going, "All of it, huh?" And that was one of them. I paid the price, but it was the hope I needed.
The waiters walking up with like the to-go bag and turning around, seeing the empty plate. Like, oh, doesn't need that.
There's a restaurant in Shell Beach, California, Ventana Grill. They have a burrito on there, or they did at least. At one time I ate it, it's like 15 years ago. The waiter literally goes, "I've never seen anyone finish that."
You should get songs. You know, there's the ice cream places that do the songs or like give Farrell's, you a, yeah. metal or whatever. You know, like, yeah.
Give me a defibrillator right at the table.
You should be like a military general who's just like got all these badges for all the burritos you've finished.
Burritos I finished. For all the burritos I've finished before. Yeah.
That makes me think of The Great Outdoors with John Candy. I have not thought about that movie in years, but I loved that scene when they were in the in that lodge or whatever eating.
Yeah.
That's me.
So good. So good.
So anyways, but it was a great time. And it was a good time. Good day.
It was. Yeah, no, it was great. And I feel your pain and your writing partner's pain at getting that, you know, sort of trial by fire where people are crappy about art.
Yeah.
Horrible. Don't like it, don't like it, don't be a jerk about it, as we all often talk about it. But I went through kind of like a similar journey with the screening. Like, I've been lucky to see the short film, The Nightmare Adorable, with audiences a couple of times, and it's always gone well. But you never know what you're getting with the film festival, with attendance, with how the festival is run, with the tech. It's just, you spend all of this time trying to make the film technically perfect, and then you send it into them, and they're like, don't worry, we've got it. And then you don't know if the sound is going to come out. You don't know if it's going to be wrong. You know, and so I was like, I'm going to be real nervous about all that stuff. So I'll get there early and I'll go to a previous screening to kind of see what the vibe is. And the technical specs of the way they showed the films were phenomenal. But the attendance, I went to a screening at noon. The attendance was real light. There are some people there who had made a fantastic film and they stood up at the end. It's like, well, weird to watch it with no one. And I was like, I was here and I liked it. And they're happy with it. But, you know, it's like, it's hard. It's 2 o'clock on a Sunday in downtown Los Angeles, which is. So anyway, I was very gratified that, you know, a decent amount of people showed up. I think, you know, a lot of people for all of the films in that block, and it went really well. And it was a beautiful reward of all the work that goes into the film to see it with the cast and to be able to like lean over and look at everybody. And I, you know, patted Ken on the shoulders like, this always gets a laugh. At one of the moments that always gets a laugh. And that was just a joy. And then to eat, you know, a reasonable amount of delicious food for myself was good. That was my main. I also shot another film this weekend, which was just a wonderful experience. But so I'm feeling very lucky and wanting to keep making film adventures.
Make them films.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Jennifer, did you eat too much of anything this weekend?
No, but whenever I go to El Cholo, I always finish my meal, which is the enchiladas suizas, I believe. Yes. Oh, yeah. And I'm always asking for another thing of salsa. They're like, more? I'm like, yes, I need my own, please. I love that place. I went roller skating for a kid's birthday. And I had this funniest thing, which is not funny, but around me, all the children were falling. Like, these are, you know, young kids falling. And there I was, my speed skating self. I grew up roller skating and I felt so good that me, this older person, just wheeling around while the kids around me were falling. I was like, I finally have an advantage. But it was a lot of fun. And it just reminded me it's like riding a bike, roller skating. You can still do it. Even if you're in the next day, you're in a tremendous amount of pain. But yeah.
Were you sore not from falling, but just for that much limb use?
It was more my back. I've been telling you guys off air. I was like, oh yeah, okay. But it was a lot of fun and my kids had fun. And it's not easy to roller skate, right?
I can't do it. I've tried. I don't have faith in the process.
No. I would be like Yoda in Attack of the Clones, and except for I can't summon my cane from the ground.
They have these like not walkers, but like kind of this like contraption like a walker for kids, and it wheels with them so that they can learn. Mm-hmm. We didn't have that when we were kids. It was just a tremendous help for my girls, and it actually helped them conquer it by the end. They could both skate.
See, we had wood and metal slides, and roller skating was something you either did or didn't do. Wow.
Just face plant. Break your arm. That'll teach you. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Oh, my God.
The good old days.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That was good. That was a good time.
Oh, well, what a great mix of adventures. Roller skating is just like riding a bike with two bikes on your feet, eating a burrito. So many beautiful things.
Love it. Love it.
Are you guys ready to dive into then our questions for this episode?
Absolutely.
Yes.
We got two Star Wars questions, and then there's a life question that's a little bit of a shorter question. So I threw in a kind of a bonus life question at the end. But first, we're going to go to Star Wars. This comes to us from our patron, Zach Martin, who says, hello, Force Center. As I mentioned in the comments of the video, I really enjoyed the first episode of Jedi Beats. I especially enjoyed the anecdote about young George Lucas wandering into Stuart Freeborn's workshop, much to Freeborn's confusion. I got such a vivid picture in my mind of that moment. I thought, this has to be a scene in a movie. So my question is this. Do you think we will ever get a film dramatization of the making of Star Wars? I can't believe it never occurred to me before, but it would be great. It's got all the elements. A ragtag group of young creatives racing against time and budgets to make something that changes the world. Also, what would your fan casting choice be for who would play George? My vote goes to Ben Whishaw. Hey, a 007 connection. I could also see it expanding to a trilogy following the making of other movies and George's journey from indie filmmaking rebel to the creator and owner of a billion-dollar empire of dreams, if you will. Oh, Zach, we will, because we love the documentary Empire of Dreams, and I think it figures into this conversation. So, Jennifer, since this is all cued off by your great first episode of Jedi Beats, what do you think about the idea of a dramatic biopic making of Star Wars with the young George Lucas? Are you excited for it?
Yeah, something I had not thought about, but it makes a lot of sense. I guess the only thing is generally they don't make too many movies about making movies in the past. Right? I feel like there's a lot of biopics, historical things, historical events. Mm-hmm. But this is a historical event, as we've talked about before, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't – and I almost wonder if – is it too close and George Lucas is still alive? A lot of the people are still alive. Star Wars is still going. Maybe it might need a little bit more time, a little bit more distance. But I just think about even like, you know, George Lucas, Steven Spielberg, Francis Ford Coppola, that little group, right?
Mm-hmm.
That could be really fascinating.
I mean, there's plenty of conflict in there with, you know, George's famous, you know, just getting exhausted to the point of hospitalization and the Dykstra team and a lot of the stories that were told in really well from the Industrial Light and Magic documentary on Disney Plus. There's a ton there. Ken, I want to hear your general thoughts. Mm-hmm. And then I'm interested in talking about why it hasn't happened, because that's what my mind went to of like. I think there's reasons it hasn't happened yet, like Jennifer's talking about.
Yeah, and I'm doing even some on-air research. Overall, I love this idea. There has been things along the way that make me think about this, whether it be the George Lucas in Love from like 1999, one of the first viral videos I think Tim Dowling, a screenwriter, worked on. Then you had, you know, the first episode of The Toys that Made Us has a lot of recreations and actually I thought did good casting and it made me think of, I'd love to just keep going with that. So this is a wonderful idea. And there was a series. Do you all remember? It was I ended up doing some work for Wondery. I wrote a documentary podcast series on The Rock versus Steve Austin, and it was a documentary tale on those two wrestlers and how they're intertwined. And that was based off the Spielberg versus Lucas one they had done or the company put out, and it got pretty popular for a while. And it was a mix of fact and fiction. As was mine, you're kind of putting together, you know, stuff off of, you know, little Instagram posts and turning those into scenes. You know, that's the kind of it goes. But all that to say, I think overall this is a great idea. Timing, the reasons why, that's part of the discussion.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. And there's, you know, the specificity in Zach's question about a making of Star Wars, but then I was also just thinking about like a general biopic that went through his entire life. I think there is a little resurgence in making dramatizations of making famous things. There's, I believe, that show The Offer about Godfather.
Yeah,
and a few of the people who are tangentially involved, like the daughter of a person involved, was not jazzed about some of the things that were said. Things like that, which is always a risk of making new things. But I feel like right now the industry is still, as we've talked about, in a place where any bit of familiarity or any bit of the audience already knows what we're marketing makes them feel safer. That's why, you know, you're getting people like, we want to make IP. We honestly don't even care if it's very popular IP. We will, we will buy the rights for a book that hasn't been published yet because the book will do half of our advertising for us.
Right.
I think that mindset makes it a friendly time to make movies about pre-existing movies because you got something to advertise. What I wanted to ask you both about is I feel like one of the reasons that it might not have happened is that it's actually a relatively new thing from my perspective that people respect George Lucas.
Yes.
He was absolutely derided for the prequels. He was made fun of. The only films that existed about him were, you know, condemnations of him, like The People versus George Lucas. Or documentaries he made himself about himself, like Empire of Dreams that he released. So like in the 2000s, and even in the all the way up through the mid 2010 teens when The Force Awakens was coming out, some of that first stuff was lip service to respect for George Lucas, but also like so much of The Force Awakens promotion was, don't worry, it's going to be like the original trilogy before George Lucas lost it and went bonkers with the prequels, right? The prequel generation getting to the right age and, you know, for better or worse, people who don't like the sequel trilogies and put all their focus on, I like George Lucas's Star Wars. I feel like those factors have kind of combined. So now if you post about George Lucas on social media, you'll probably get more positive comments than
Yeah.
I mean, if you said the words George Lucas in the 2000s, like grumpy Gen Xers would just like turn and spit on the ground. That's not, you know, so I think it's kind of fascinating. It's really only in the last maybe 10 years that people would be like, yes, let's honor the achievement of this man. As opposed to you say his name and the knee-jerk reaction you get is a list of complaints about his failures.
I really think you're right. And that's maybe a separate conversation and discussion point too of even early, you know, digital media movie discussion days. It was just kind of a given, right? You know, remember when George ruined everything? It was just kind of what was implied. And so, yeah, I'm glad to see it's changed. I don't think that was ever the truth. And People versus George Lucas is one of the worst things I think ever created. and can say that because I have, as I said before, I have a pal, Mark Riley, who appears in it and basically said they lied about what they were making to get some books on there. But I think now it's and I think the story of Star Wars is the making of Star Wars is so familiar that maybe I'm thinking, would it just be things I hadn't heard? But then even Jen, your first episode of Jedi Beat that people have seen, like I'm one of many who was like, oh, I've never seen that photo. Oh, I never knew that little tale. That's one of the successes of your project is digging it deep. So you could find corners to crawl into or really highlight things. You mentioned it, Joseph. It's a trivia question. Well, George went in the hospital with what he thought was a heart attack. That's pretty big. That's a pretty big scene to show of George dying in his mind, not knowing what he's going on. Yeah, you could have you could do that. But my this maybe is jumping ahead of the conversation. I just don't. I wonder if George is like, if anyone's ever approached him or would, he'd be like, no, the world doesn't need that. The world doesn't need a story of me.
I have, I don't have a quick phone line to old George Lucas, so I have no idea what he really thinks. But I feel like he's said his piece with his documentary about his life as it relates to Star Wars with Empire of Dreams. And he's shared his perspective, and he included some people who disagree with him in that documentary. There are a zillion books that people have written about him. I don't think he has sat down and, I mean, he's done like the interviews for like the Tashin Big archives, but he hasn't been like, what I want to do with my life is sit down and write my definitive biography or even hire someone. So there's a part of me that feels like I wonder if he feels like he told his story with Empire of Dreams. Good. I'm on to the next thing. And if another reason it might not have been made, or even considered, is because I can't imagine he'd say great things about it, right?
Yeah.
Jennifer, what are your thoughts on Lucas's reaction?
Yeah, I think that that's a big reason why nobody's done it is because a lot of directors greatly respect him, right? Mm-hmm. They would want to get his blessing. Mm-hmm. He's going to say no or like make it uncomfortable, or they know he's going to slam it after they've worked on this film, right? I just think, I don't know. And he actually is very friendly with a lot of younger directors, mm-hmm. right? So I think that's another layer where it's like, well, if you're J.J. Abrams, for example, mm-hmm. are you going to want to go to George and be like, I'm going to tell your life story? Like, I can't imagine. That's why mm-hmm. I think that maybe when he's really old or unfortunately dead, that people will be like, okay, now's our time to tell his story.
the vultures are circling.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ken.
I think he also might be like, yeah, you want to make a movie about my life. The third act has to be me making the narrative museum. You have to end it in my museum.
Yeah.
Concentrate on that.
I honestly think a biopic, you know, 10, 15, 20, 25 years. Hey, let's hope that George Lucas is the first person to live to 150. So 60 years from now, whatever. Yep. When he is gone, I think a biopic would be really fascinating because there's some mm-hmm. amount of respect of like the person isn't here. So now he lives in our cultural memory. And now we get to sort of struggle with, Who was this person really? What is the through line of their entire life? Mm-hmm. And I think the Lucas Museum of Narrative Art is going to be a huge thing. And it's a mm-hmm. huge part of the story of who this man is that mm-hmm. we know so much about his Star Wars journey because he has shared it in various documentaries and he's given interviews for Tash. And mm-hmm. like that information is out there about the making of Star Wars, mm-hmm. but the ups and downs of trying to make Lucas Museum of Narrative Art. I think people have probably like seen articles or that, but if you really track it, mm-hmm. He wanted to have it in San Francisco. And basically people who didn't want the space movie man to sully their beautiful areas mm-hmm. pushed him out. I mean, it's classic what Lucas rails against. Yeah. And it ended up in LA because LA was the city friendly to it. Mm-hmm. And from behind the scenes, it sounds like he spent a decent amount of time special editioning the museum, which is why it's taken, because he wants it to be just right. There's so much that's like, and the fact that just this is what he wants his thing to be. He could be off making more movies, but he wants to make a museum where the stated intent is that people can celebrate the idea of telling stories and how important it is, and that younger generations can be inspired to tell stories. Mm-hmm. Like, it's rich and fascinating.
Yeah. One angle on it too. And I wonder if I had the chance to pitch to George, I will not. I would go almost the Shakespeare love route where I bet he would react to a completely fake biopic where they'd be like, all right, what if we could tell the making of Star Wars, but it's not real. Like your car crash is going to be a space plane crash. It's going to be completely imagined. And a total work of fiction, but have it, like, I'm even thinking too, like the movie, Milos Forman's, Man on the Moon 99, which was a complete not retelling of Andy Kaufman, but also a telling of it where they acknowledge at the beginning of the movie, this is not how it all happened. Where George would be like, okay, that's interesting versus just, he'd be like, yeah, it ends in a Sbarro. I got it. Like everyone's heard that story, but if you just come from a different angle, it's a different pitch than what Zach's talking about, but you know, I know he has a weird sense mm-hmm. of humor that might take to something like that.
What do you think about that, Jennifer? The difference between like a grounded, realistic depiction of the making of Star Wars versus something that is a little bit more bonkers and out there, like
I could see that more likely, or that it's kind of loosely based on the events, right? So maybe mm-hmm. it's not Star Wars, it's the War in the Stars. Like, I don't know, like, it's just a looser adaptation of it, right? Mm-hmm. And things are changed for dramatization purposes. I can see that. I also think, like, I think he'd be kind of angry because he's like, I'm still alive. I'm still doing mm-hmm. things. Like, you're talking about the narrative museum. Like, mm-hmm. this is what you do when people are dead. Like, yeah. I'm still creating things. And mm-hmm. I think he is still working on his legacy. And what mm-hmm. he is doing with that museum is incredible. Making it accessible for for people in that community and for all around Los Angeles that is right by the metro line or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have like all these events and things for schools. Like this is going to impact so many people and in a beautiful way. And I think that is going to be a huge chunk of his legacy.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for it to open. I cannot wait to spend time there. So we're spiraling out a little bit from Zach's question to kind of overall biopic. But since Zach's question was sort of specifically about a contained film that's the making of the first film, the thing with biopics is that, you know, in order to not just be documentaries with actors doing recreations, they have to have a perspective, a through line, a like point. Ken, do you have an idea for you, if you were sitting in front of Lucas and you were pitching the making of Star Wars as a dramatic film, what to you is the through line? What's the heart of it? What's the story?
I mean, I would turn to you because we'd be in the room together and be like, it's going to be called The Rebel in Flannel. And here we go. But I think it is a story of that generation of creators and what they were building and what they were creating for all of us at the time and the dangers of it there too, because along the way you have everything George is still talking about. If you get him to sit down in an interview of all these, you know, toaster magnets were the ones telling us how to make movies, not you know, family, you know, Metro Golden Mare families, you know, it had changed. The studio system changed and it was corporations. And he was lucky to find someone like Alan Ladd Jr. who believed in him more than even the product he was having. And even then they tried to change it. Alan Ladd's almost, you know, walks out. You know, you could include that if you're going all the way up to Empire. And I think that would be my story. That would be my pitch is this is the biggest, you know, saga of all time, billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar franchise, but it's not quite indie as the prequels were, but it's an independent filmmaker rebelling against the system that he's making this in. And I would focus on that as best I could. And I'd start it with the car crash.
Oh,
the
yeah.
The opening scene is his car crash.
Nice, dramatic. For anybody who is not a longtime listener, watcher of Force Center, Rebel in Flannel is a phrase that we throw around. Cause it's just so often, like, it just seems like who he is. And I think I that's a great working title, Ken. I think for me that it would be something about the thrust of it might be about how we all express ourselves differently. And I think what's sort of fascinating about George Lucas and why Rebel in Flannel is kind of funny to me is because he creates these visions of these dashing, daring figures that, you know, everyone from Leia to Han, all these visions of what a rebel looks like. And then for us to look at George Lucas in real life of, you know, kind of quiet from all reports, likes close personal reaction, but is not like a big, loud personality, just kind of quiet. Wants to eat at Sbarro's, does not want to be fancy, wants to be in flannel. Like all these things to us wouldn't say unstoppable dynamo culturally, you know, and just this idea of like, yep, on the surface, he is not what we associate with what he accomplished. And to me, that's a lot about like he's even said, I struggle with talking to actors. That's been the report on the prequels of like, George didn't have a lot to say. It's fascinating to me to think about how we all communicate differently. And some people, I think, find their way to art because that's how they feel comfortable being passionate. And I think that's all of his passion is on the screen. And, you know, all of that zip and energy and forward movement and everything that he needed to accomplish that, put that on the screen is this great celebration of passion coming from a place that we don't always assume it will, from flannel.
Yeah, he's the opposite of a John Milius type who crafted this image about him and it was this bowling ball running down Hollywood. And I don't think Spielberg has an image either, but it's a little, I don't know. He has a different energy to him than
he's
even George.
He's much more of a, like, he's not like Orson Welles or Quentin Tarantino. Yeah. Like there's directors who are like a person, David Lynch, who are personalities onto themselves. Like if you never made a film, people would probably listen to you guys talk.
Yeah.
And Orson Welles was an actor, obviously. But but Spielberg's out there talking, pitching, you know, talking about his feelings. And Lucas is much more mild-mannered even than Spielberg, you know. Yeah. Jennifer, what do you feel like for you when you go through the story of the making of the first film? What's the emotional thread that resonates with you?
One of the things I think about is his thought process and who he really is, and why does he do the things that he does? Like, I feel like I have a sense of who he is, and it's easy to kind of write him off as just like quirky, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things, and we'll talk about this in a minute, but for me, whoever is the actor is the most crucial thing, because they need to create a person and show what is he thinking of when he's writing this down. What is his thought process for why he feels so compelled to go and do the special editions? Like, beyond, like, it's something so deep rooted. And as an actor, you have to find that out. And obviously, if he could talk to George Lucas and get that insight, I don't know that George Lucas would be able to articulate it or share it. Yeah. So the actor would have to find it. But I think just really painting that picture, and I want to see that thought process on the screen. That's what I find so interesting. What I think would make people really understand the genius and have more empathy for him, and also more praise for what he did.
Mm-hmm.
What he's done, rather.
Yeah, I love that detail that pops up that, you know, he was so frustrated that people didn't hear the message of THX 1138. And people were like, his other filmmaker friends were like, I challenge you to make something like that's warm and fun. And he's like, all right, I'll take the challenge. I'll make it warm and fun, and I'll include all the messages from THX 1138. Even that sort of, motivation catalyst towards Star Wars is rebellious of like, I'll show you.
Yeah, it's totally
fascinating. Let's talk about actors, because Zach does ask about who he would cast. He offers Ben Whishaw, which is, everything from Paddington to Q in the James Bond movies. I think he's a great choice. Ken, do you have other casting choices?
I always admit I'm bad at casting because I don't pay attention as much as I used to the names. And then I looked up, I know who Ben Whishaw is, but I looked him up in Google search. And like the first shot is him with a beard and puffy hair. And I'm like, oh, that's George from that era. So let's get a nice British actor to do this. So I don't know. I admit to being a little lost on that. I do know. I absolutely want Alden Ehrenreich to play.
No.
Get Harrison Ford on set here. And I don't know, Billy Lord as Leia, I don't know, as Carrie Fisher, Billy Bobby Brown as Carrie Fisher. I don't know. I don't care. But at that point, I'd be happy to have it all.
Yeah, that's a 4-hour episode of Four Center trying to cast all the people to play. not the characters, but the actors.
That's a whole other can of worms. Mm-hmm. How do you cast these icons? Maybe that's why no one's touched it. Because you have these giants in the industry. You can't cast it. It could make it seem really cheesy.
Well, that's if you look in a lot of those films, the biopic stuff. Yeah, it's either really inspired or catches off guard or borders on parody, and that can be unfortunate. I one of my favorite books and stories, but one of my favorite, I do like the HBO movie of Late Shift. The story of Lennon and Leno and Letterman and Carson. And, you have John Michael Higgins as Letterman. Letterman famously hated it. Would go on a show, make fun of the movie and everything. You have Leno, and it does look kind of like a bad sketch, but it's a great movie. But it's sometimes it's just really hard to do that stuff without making it look like a mad TV sketch or something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like The Aviator, right? Like, I was not a fan with some of those portrayals of these icons. I don't know. And those were great actors. Like, it's not like they're not good actors.
Yeah. This is why I contend the greatest movie of all time, not Young Guns 2, is the Weird Al Yankovic movie that came out. If no one saw it last year, it's because it's completely fake. And there's a little element of truth, but there's this great scene, and you have all these actors, playing. I think it's a Jack Black as Wolfman Jack at one point. You got Rainn Wilson as Dr. Demento, and they look exactly like them, but they look nothing like them. And it's just the most great. It's the greatest scene, this backyard thing where he unveils his first song. It's amazing. So that's why I was maybe thinking of Weird Wild Stuff. But I think you can find some serious actors.
Yeah. Yeah. Thinking through it as the making of Star Wars, you know, I'm Googling actors in their 20s and the first one who popped up is Timothée Chalamet.
Yeah. See, yeah.
And Jennifer's like, nope.
It'd probably be something like that. It'd be Bradley Cooper with a de-aged face on or something. Yeah.
What if it morphed from Timothée Chalamet to Bradley Cooper?
Yeah. They'll bring in Jacob Elordi because, yeah, he's really popular right now.
Bradley Cooper spent 6 months eating at a Sbarro every day to prepare for this role. In flannel.
I need to live inside his skin. His flannel skin. Yeah. No, I mean, we've talked about this recently. An unknown is my first choice, because find some great young theater actor who is not loaded down with us with cultural baggage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Either that or my super weird choice is Hayden Christensen, just because that would there's something about them where they're both like, you know, Still Waters Run Deep vibe with both Lucas and Hayden Christensen. You know?
Yes. You know what I would say Hayden Christensen is? Alan Ladd Jr.
Yes.
Oh.
Ken says, you got go picture. You got go picture. Hayden really does believe in George. So,
and he can do that quiet, soft spoken thing. Alan Ladd Jr. is a walking ASMR video with his voice. So, yeah, let's do that.
That's so good. Any other choices from you, Jennifer?
No, I think it's really a challenge. I mean, these people have nothing to do with George Lucas, but like I think of an actor like a Paul Giamatti or a Michael Fassbender, who did very great work as Steve Jobs, right?
Oh, yeah.
Able to say so much with so little, and their work is just fantastic. So it's got to be somebody like that, but an unknown who looks like George Lucas.
Yeah. An unknown who can play real internal, right? Because that is Lucas is real internal.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other thoughts before we take our quick break, Ken?
I mean, I want to see all this now. We got to work on this. Let's get a meeting. Let's take a meeting.
Let's take a meeting. We got a lot of really, really questionable ideas. Somebody have a meeting with us.
Okay. I want Weird Al as George Lucas, but I want Alden Ehrenreich. Yeah. Yeah,
there you go. We're just a total live, like George Lucas, who always dreamed of playing the accordion, but had an accordion accident and instead made Star Wars. Why not? Have fun with it. Great question, Zach Martin. We are going to take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment with more questions. Back in a moment.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs.
Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we are back here on Force Center. Questions of the everything. We've got a couple of great Star Wars questions from our patrons on Patreon and one really fun life question. So our next Star Wars question comes from Commander Cloud, one of the greatest names in our Patreon. Commander says, greetings, exalted ones. Suppose that General Grievous had escaped his duel with Obi-Wan on Utapau and lived to scurry and cough another day. What do you think would have become of him after the Clone Wars? Go into hiding, become a terrorist, become an inquisitor, maybe even team up with Maul and get revenge on Sidious and Kenobi? What would you all want to see? Thanks, and may the force of others be with you. What do we want to see?
I hadn't really, I'd read this question, but I did not, now just got the image of Grievous at a spider leg Maul going, let's get him. Let's do it.
Yep. Look at where we end up. Jennifer, I don't know if we've talked in recent times about your opinions of General Grievous, how you first received him and what you think of the character now.
I like the character. I think he was so odd. I remember when I first saw him, my kids loved my little action figure and they would play with him a lot, which I always thought was so funny. I'm like, why are you so drawn to this character? But they really were. They were drawn to him. And then was it with I can't even remember now, the Clone Wars, the storyline with his lair. Am I remembering mm-hmm. that wrong?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I thought that was really fascinating, getting more insight into this character. But yeah, this is an interesting question and something I had not thought about, but I love the image of him scurrying away.
Exactly. Scurrying and coughing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I always was intrigued by the character. I think when he first came out in Revenge of Sith, you know, I didn't know there was going to be a new villain. And then the build up with the Clone Wars 2D mm-hmm. series. And I was excited to see him. And then I remember being like, I really like him. And also, is a cough the most frightening thing? Mm-hmm. That said, my wife's had a cough for a little while. And it is quite frightening after a while. Mm. And you're like, constantly being startled by a cough. But I've come to really, really love the character, thinking about what he means in relation to Vader, of being a sort of proto-Vader, the various storylines, both in canon, in legends, that this is not a story of somebody who is wounded. And, you know, you can look at Vader as an analogy of battle scars, of these choices, you know, caused him to lose humanity. But Grievous's story being like, I want to be the greatest warrior and I will willingly give away my humanity to do it. And I want to become this sort of frightening, you know, no longer, you know, organic in my soul kind of character. Makes him so interesting and just such a, if we get to learn over all of Star Wars, how actually complex and sad Vader is, Grievous is just so blunt of just made a bad choice. And I scurry and cough my way through it without ever questioning it. So I think a lot about who the character is, because that makes me think about, well, what would he do? What would he believe if he survived? Ken, where are you at with your Grievous? What's your top line Grievous thoughts?
I'll try to contain myself. It's one of the characters I swung and missed at the most of my Star Wars fandom. But like you, Joseph, you know, I think I'd heard the name and I thought it was a pretty cool name, even though it was, you know, pulp for in a time where maybe I didn't appreciate the pulp as much. But yeah, he shows up and he's hacking and he's coughing, and you know, an entire generation went, what? And I get it. I was one of those, even early in Force Center. I named him as one of my most disappointing Star Wars characters. I wanted more. Mm. Part of that was on the idea of, I think it's the Attack of the Clone novelization, which I don't actually know where my copy is. I don't know what happened to it. You know, he's unveiled in the catacombs, and he's down. He's like a monster in the basement, and he's killing Jedi, and that's pretty cool. And that is cool, and that's probably in my mind still how it happened. And I don't mean to take a general swipe at Legends in EU, but I think it's well known that I don't have I've complicated relationship with Legends in EU. The story that you're talking about, I don't know the details, and someone will probably post, it's in the book General Grievous and the Hive of Vengeance or some weird Legends title. There was a crash. Whether the crash was intentional by maybe the Separatists, we don't know, but the idea was, hey, we'll save you, versus what is there now, which is a choice he made. I need to become more powerful, so I'm going to sacrifice part of who I am to do this. And and he never is that powered. So I value this character more. There was discourse not too long ago on the socials that I stumbled into of this kind of thing of, well, Grievous should have been badass. He should have. That's not the point. He was, but that's not the point. He is Proto Vader. And it's screaming at you all through it. And so I absolutely love what the character represents now. He should always run away. He is an absolute coward. He gave up his life to be powerful, and he's not, which feeds into my answer we get into. But, like, if he survives, if he scurries away and survives, I think he has no place. I think Palpatine might try to put him on trial, you know? And it'd be almost that look on Dooku's face in Revenge of the Sith of, I knew the game, but now that there's two sabers around my neck and my buddy Sheev is about to kill me, I'm a little shocked that this is how it turned out. And the Grievous would have the, I'm here, and Sheev would be like, I don't know, this is an enemy, get him away. And the power he craved, the position in the galaxy he thought he was going to have, is not there. And at best, he'd be an attack dog, not unlike Palpatine kind of used Vader at times. Mm-hmm. So that's where I'd go with that.
Yeah, I love that you bring up the Dooku thing. We talk a lot about the great look on Dooku's face where the dime drops.
Mm-hmm.
We don't talk as often about the fact that Palpatine, he basically does kind of a reveal of like, ha ha, sucker. And he's like, kill him, let him down. And then he's like, it looks over at Dooku like, you get it now? Mm. I think he'd be even more merciless with Grievous. I think Grievous is like, Grievous is nothing to him. He has no value. He's a blunt tool for the Clone Wars. He was a tool of a tool. He was under Dooku.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that Palpatine would, the show trial is a really funny idea of, let's put this traitor, you know, on trial. But I think he'd be too risky that Grievous might spill some detail.
Right.
Grievous would sell him out, and would anybody believe him? And like, no, he would just want, I think if Grievous had survived, that would have been Vader's first assignment. That would have been Palpatine saying, prove yourself to me, prove that in your, you know, you let yourself get wounded and battered, and now you're, you know, a walking mechanical menace like Grievous, prove you're the better one.
Yeah.
And I think Vader would have taken him out.
100%. Actually, that's great. That's a great idea. Yeah. Go. Yeah. You got your lightsaber now. You bled it, Vader. Mm-hmm. I'm going to break even more, but, you know, take your place. Just go to hunt down this traitor to the Republic.
Yeah. What do you think, Jennifer, of the what would have happened to Grievous immediately after his sort of survival at the end of the Clone Wars when things weren't looking good for him?
Yeah, that actually reminds me. Was it the comics where they had to duke it out, and that cyborg Mon Calamari?
Yeah.
Is that it?
That was early in the run of the Vader run of surprise. Palpatine's got six replacements ready for you.
Yeah, right.
Right, so, and one of them's like, the Mon Calamari General Grievous. Like, what? Yep. It's a good idea.
Yep.
Yeah.
Lots of robot limbs are a real good idea. Why would we just abandon that? You know?
Right. I think that Grievous is such a tragic figure. He just, it just seems sad. Like, the more that I learned about him, the sadder he became. Mm-hmm. And he is a coward. And I think he would have gone into hiding. And people would have been able to find him easily because he coughs so loudly. And
he's not good at hide and seek, is he?
No. Yeah. So, yeah. I think that he just, he would go out like a coward. And he just seemed so, I was always surprised because he seemed like such a fragile character, but then he was also very powerful against Obi-Wan. So, but I'm sure he'd get taken out pretty easily. He's just, I don't want to say he's pathetic, but it's just sad.
It's a great way to look at it. And a lot of my relationship with the prequels now versus then can be wrapped up in this discussion of Grievous. I don't mean to be, hammer it, but it's not too hard to understand if you're looking at it. And in 2005, I'm giving myself a little bit of grace. I was looking at it differently. Mm-hmm. I was looking at it, and it's viewed as a miss. Grievous is a miss. I even went on this channel in 2015 and said Grievous was a miss, and that's not accurate. It was very purposeful. It's exactly what you're describing, Jen. It's pretty sad and pathetic, huh, Anakin? Don't you get it? And it just is, and so it's frustrated. This is probably why George packed up his things and left at one point. Was like, I didn't make it deep. I just put it right there for y'all, and y'all yelled at me. That's where I'm not, where just looking at the prequels, looking at Grievous from a different point of view, the point of view that he represents. I think he's a great character. Sorry. I'm going to go on a prequel loving rant.
No, and I think he was developed really well in the Clone Wars. I think it was minimal. We didn't dive super deep, but the layer of Grievous and, I don't remember all the details, but when we were doing the Clone Wars report, a couple of good back and forth with Kenobi of why are you doing this? I hate Jedi. Why? Yeah. That want to prove I'm better than them, and it's so sad and so empty and so thin that it exposes, I think, that sort of viewpoint of I just want to be stronger, I just want to be better. How incredibly empty it is to follow that drive and that instinct. And I think if he survived there, I almost have this hope of is this character possibly able to have an epiphany? Because Maul has this sort of epiphany of I was used, I was thrown away. I'll take the galaxy back. I will, myself. And he keeps trying to sort of right the situation, but he never gets anywhere away from letting go of the dark side, letting go of his hate and his anger and in the worldview that Sidious, imposed on him.
Yeah.
It'd be fascinating if Grievous is just like, oh, wait, I was just used and thrown away. I get now that the Clone Wars, there was never going to be a happy ending for me. Sidious had Dooku killed. I was just a pawn. In some tragic story where he's just using his limbs to farm on some remote planet.
he's on Lamu with Galen Erso.
He's on Lamu with the Ersos.
Yeah.
And Jen talks about her childhood pal, Greavy.
Greavy. Oh, Uncle Greavy was great. What happened to him? Wait, what are you talking
about? Jennifer, do you think it's possible for a character like Grievous to change?
No, I think that you have to have some depth in and be able to reflect. Yeah. It just doesn't seem like the type. That's what makes Maul so fascinating is that he's more like Shakespearean. Mm-hmm. Grievous is just, that's why he's just so sad. It's he's a lost cause.
You're right. I mean, that's part of what I think, people are maybe challenged by, but I ultimately came to love about Grievous is just how blunt and almost so incredibly simple of what's better than one lightsaber? Four lightsabers.
Yes.
Right. So it does seem like his emotional reaction would be, I didn't have enough limbs. If I had 16 limbs and 16 lightsabers, then I would be unstoppable and just be like, that's not the way it works, bud.
Yeah. Yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah, very sad. Very sad. Any other thoughts on poor Grievous and what he would do had he survived?
I do think it'd just be the dime would drop as you said so well, and now I just picture him talking to someone. You're a farmer, Uncle Greavy. It's a good life. It's a good life. Just leave me alone.
Poor Greavy. Any final thoughts, Jennifer?
No, but it does make me wonder where my action figure is. I'm sure that maybe the dog chewed it up, which is just so fitting for that character.
I've got to pick up the action figure of him in his moment of death. That's with his organ sac hanging out and flames shooting out of his eyes.
Oh, yeah, that's a great thing.
Wow.
Yeah, I think the back of the card has, like, you know, a Grievous smear on it. Poor Greavy. Hard time. Yeah. Got to celebrate him. Anyway, a toast to Greavy. And then we we move on to our final question. Been doing two questions, but some of our questions are a little bit more shorter, straightforward. So we're going to tag some on here. This one comes to us from Spencer Wakefield, who says, "Hey, Four Center crew, let's talk numbers. Are there any numbers, Star Warsy or otherwise, that pop up frequently in your life, whether intentionally or not? I swear I look at the clock at 11:38 at least 5 times a week, sometimes more. Are there any lucky numbers you're drawn to? If so, where do they come from? Is it your high school jersey number, the year you were born, or does it just have that certain je ne sais quoi? I've adopted 13 as my go-to integer because I'm partial to odd numbers and decidedly anti-superstitious. Finally, do you have any quirky rules around numbers, like needing to have the television volume set to a multiple of 5? This is, I think, a really fun question because I think it is about our relationship with numbers. And this question is the challenge of, can we talk about it without giving away any of our passwords?
Oh, I'm glad you said that.
Because honestly, when it first came, I was like, oh yeah, this and this. And like, no, you cannot. Don't mention those numbers.
Oh, wow.
There, yikes. I'm leaving one out of this conversation so that it will always be a mystery.
Yep. Well, I really gravitate toward my social security numbers. Let me say it on YouTube and podcast. Jennifer, what's your general relationship with numbers? Do you have favorite numbers? Do you think about this kind of thing?
I am fascinated with people who are fascinated with numbers. Numerology, for example. My grandmother was really into numbers, and I was very young, and she would go on and on about the numbers and numbers and numbers. And I have never really delved into it, but I have heard that there are numbers that you might see often. And what does that mean to you, right? Mm-hmm. Something that's funny for me was when I was waiting tables, I had this ability to know exactly what time it was at any given time. I was really, because sometimes time would move really slowly. And I'm like, I bet you it's 11:38. And I look up at the clock and it was 11:38. It was this weird thing. I can't do it anymore. It was only when I was waiting tables. I'm also terrible at math. So I have all these dueling things right now. And I don't want to give away any of my password numbers. So that's where I'm going to leave it for the moment.
I think it's fascinating that that when we are good at estimating time and we're not, it sounds to me like you probably had a really good sense of your own internal clock that is adjusted based on how fast the day is going. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're talking about when it's really slow and dead and it is taking forever for your job to end versus you're slammed and time is flying, that you have some amount of like honesty with yourself about how your feelings relate to time. Or perception of time, right?
Yeah.
Because there is that thing of like, I remember as a kid being fascinated by like, wait, if everything was boring, would I live longer? Because it felt like time travel, right? It felt
like
I could play with my action figures 2 hours past, like,
wow, that's huge.
Like it snap. If my mom takes me to like her college class with her and I'm just sitting in a back row, it's just endless. Like,
no. Wow.
Is that a way to access the powers of time travel?
Love that.
I'll let scientists work on that one. Ken, do you have a relationship with numbers like this?
Not a huge one. I have some numbers I'll list, some I'll keep back. That is so funny. But like you, Jed, I like people – I like trying to understand why people have that relationship with numbers. You know, it's like I don't necessarily believe in ghosts, but I'm fascinated by those that do, which is why I watch all those weird ghost hunting shows and silly ghost hunting shows. I'm just fascinated by the people who have made that full commitment to the idea. I definitely see 11:11 a lot. You know, I look up and it's 11:11 and all that stuff, only because I think I'm now aware of it. I love, you know, there's a lot going around with Taylor Swift and 13.
Oh yeah!
That you could find all the stuff around the score, the teams, this and that, the album, the track, and you know, I don't know even what to what end people are putting that out there for, but it's fascinating. On a darker side, I remember around 9/11, you could count numbers and add it up, and it would be 9/11 or 911, and Again, I don't know what and why that what that even means, but it's fascinating. And I'll watch a little explainer video on it every now and then. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna lie, but for me, having been a sports fan, I have some numbers. My favorite baseball player wore number 8, Gary Carter, for years. So 8's always been one of my favorite numbers because of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I love the number 42, and I put that on. I order custom Converse, and they all have the number 42 on them. And I would I would work 42 and still kind of work 42 into any comedy scripts or something like that, or any scripts I wrote. You know, if I have a choice of a number, it would be like 142 or 42, 40. Yeah. So, but that's just fun, silly nerd stuff for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, I definitely have those pop culture numbers, and 42 is a big one because of its power in, mm-hmm. in humor in the Douglas Adams thing. And it used to be, I think, a more subtle wink. And now I think people use it a lot.
Tattoos, and I'm sure. Yeah.
It is, which that's great. And more people should know it and love it. And, you know, there are various Star Wars numbers like 1138. There's some numbers that have popped up, you know, in all sorts of different pop culture. I struggled with math. I don't think I had good teachers, and I don't think I naturally was inclined to it. And I think if I had better teachers and got better encouragement, I would have been better at math. But like, I gave personalities to numbers. Like, one was kind of cocky, two was real nice in my mind, probably because of R2-D2. Yeah. The coolest number was 7. Everyone wanted to be 7. So that was my relationship to numbers. So I think any time that they are given personality by something exterior, like 1138, the way Spencer Wakefield is talking about it, I think you have those moments where if Star Wars had not made 1138 a special number to you, you would probably still see 1138 just as many times, but it feels like you're seeing it a lot because now it's special and it's like a little pop of joy. Every time you see that number, because it has got a personality and connects you to something you love. So I think that's why we sometimes feel like we see significant numbers. It's because they're on our mind, you know?
Yeah. And shout out to everyone, including myself. I did this once on Facebook and early Instagram. Anytime you get a receipt at a fast food restaurant that says order 66 and you post a picture of it, an angel gets their wings. And I've done that many times because it's fun.
Yeah, no, that is something really beautiful about that. Yeah. particularly if it's something really messy, like, oh, I got a meatball sub, order 66. Other one for me is that has just come from the happenstance of my life. I always like 7, I think, because I learned early on that it's sort of pulpy and magic and the connection to 007. And you know, Spencer asks if we have things like the TV volume. I'll often set things to 7 because it's fun. I did a Kickstarter once, and instead of having it for an even amount of dollars, 7 was the last dollar, so just for fun. But then that really got cemented. My birthday is August 17th. We didn't plan it. It was just the day that the venue we wanted was the most affordable. But my wedding anniversary is November 17th. And again, we didn't plan it. It was just, when can we get there? The anniversary of Sarah and I arriving in Los Angeles is March 17th. So it just sort of feels like 17 follows me around. So I like 17 a lot. And I have that same kind of thing of like, look at the clock and it's 8:17. It's kismet.
There you go. What that means. I want someone in the numbers. Tell us what that means. Why is that 17 following him?
In the comments, people are going to like, it means you're going to die. Oh, no. Jennifer, any other number stuff that you wanted to share? And no problem if you don't.
I can't remember. The trash trash person is really
ask
loud.
Them what their favorite numbers are.
You know, there's something fascinating about people who are really good at math and numbers, and they're and what I've learned from my husband, he's able to visualize it.
Yeah.
When I like what you were saying, Joseph, about like the personalities. That would have really helped me as a kid because I cannot visualize numbers in my head. And so I was always like counting on my fingers, right? But yeah, I think that people who are drawn to numbers, maybe it is more of a visual thing. And I want to learn more about this numerology thing because I think it's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's fascinating. Yeah. Ken?
It's also interesting to know that even after all these years, I still count like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Shout out to all you Sesame Streeters.
Hey, if you don't know that, Google the Sesame Street number song and you are going to have a jam to bop to.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
We were very, very lucky. Imagine Max Rebo covering that one. That would be great. All right. Any other thoughts on this question, or shall we wrap up for this episode?
Nope. I'm just going to go change all my passwords right now.
All right. That's it. Please don't hack us. It is time for Ken to tell us where you can find us.
Yes, you can. You can find us on LastPass, which secures all your passwords with one button. I'm on Twitter at Force Center Pod. No, we're on Twitter. I'm not on Twitter. Well, we kind of on Twitter. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Threads as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Instagram is also where we're at. And we've been, who knows? One day we might be live on Instagram, too, or Facebook. Check it out. We were talking about some stuff over burritos at enchiladas yesterday. Podcast is available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts. Just search. You'll find us. We're on YouTube, as we said. Subscribe over there. Check out the latest episode of Jedi Beat. And don't just check it out. Tell your friends about what we're doing over there. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And as we said before, you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Check out that shop tab, even if you're not a paid member, and see if you're interested in 007 Center. I'm at Ken Napsok or KenNapsok.com. I've got shows in Boston coming up first week of April. Mark hasn't put the official information out. At least I haven't seen it, but go to my website for more. Joseph, where can they find follow you?
Yeah, you can find me on almost all the social media at Joseph Grimshaw is my handle everywhere. I am particularly enjoying Blue Sky. We'll see if Blue Sky keeps going. Who knows who will win the social media wars and when a film will be made about it. But you can follow me on Blue Sky. You can also subscribe to my newsletter blog that I'm putting out every Tuesday. It's called Finish Your Monsters, and it's all about the creative process. Discuss a little bit what's going on with me, but also hope to encourage other people to set reasonable goals and try to get them done within the week. You can find that by just Googling Button Down, which is the host, and Finish Your Monsters.
There it is. Jen, take us home. They can find Jedi Beat here, but where can they find and follow you?
Yeah, you can also find me on my YouTube channel at Jennifer Landa, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all the same name, and TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138.
There you go. There you go, folks. A lot of fun. Thanks for the questions. We'll see you all next time here on Force Center. Joseph, do the final tagline.
The final tagline of...
Look, if you cannot tell by my glasses and my hair and my coffee, I kind of woke up late today. So I realize, even though I do the outro, it's really you're leading this the Q's episode, and I want to step on.
Oh, that's right, that's right. We do. Sometimes we have outros, sometimes we don't. Eat your burritos, kids. No, we have aid the Q's.
There it is. Bye, friends.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.